Oh, did you hear that, guys? Noel thinks we're solid quality. It's great. Hey there, folks, on CommanderCast.com and MTGCast.com. It's time for another episode of Rivals Duel, the show where I, Eric Von V, play the Ares God of War in order to counter Noel Clausen's Wonder Woman. How are those Star Spangled Shorts treating you, Noel?
I'm Wonder Woman now?
You're Wonder Woman.
Well, all right.
That didn't take any convincing at all.
Okay.
Is there something you want to tell me? I didn't have to work very hard for that one. You're just like, okay, yeah, I can do the lasso. I can do that.
No one wants to see me in booty shorts. I promise from the bottom of my heart, nobody wants that.
We have enough fans that I'm sure there is at least one person who wants to see you in booty shorts.
No. This is the point where I say sound off in the comments. And
Yeah, exactly. How are you doing, Noel?
Doing really well. We are in the middle of spoiler season, and ooh, it's fun.
Oh yeah, M15 is shaping up to be an awesome set. I'm really excited by everything that I'm seeing. And you know what? This is one of the first times I've seen a set come out, and I'm like, I'm so looking forward to our set review of this, because there's just so much cool stuff to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff in here. All kinds of neat. Like, I don't know what Limited's gonna look like. I feel like Limited might be kinda all over the place, but there's cool reprints, there's cool new stuff, and it's one of those things where Wizards picked the lousiest time on the planet to try to be updating and fixing their site. Because I'm just like, no, I want my spoilers now, not at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely. And today we're going to be talking about some of those spoilers. In the news section, we're going to be talking about the five legendaries we haven't covered. We already talked about the blue one, so we'll go through all four of the other colored ones and the new multicolored one. And then we're going to be arguing today. Yes, we finally get another argument where two generals go head to head, and me and Noel are going to be arguing over which one is scarier and better. With the generals, well, you're actually going to have to stay tuned to find that out.
Yeah, but we are, somebody pointed out to us that we hadn't actually argued in like five or six episodes, so we're back.
And it's about time, because I just can't wait to get at Noel's throat again.
And I can't wait to accidentally make Eric agree with me.
Awesome. But first, we promised that we'd go over these legendaries. We already started with the blue one. As always, blue gets an unfair head start. But
it's not like it's a good one. Like, the blue one's kind of meh. Like, on my scale of 1 to 10, this is like a 5.5.
Blue one, I think the blue one's cool. I think it's a card that's easily broken. But we're going to be talking about the other ones today. We already talked about Jalira Master Polymorphist. So we're going to go through all the other colors, and I think we're going to start with the white one.
Yeah, let's get the boring one out of the way.
Yeah, we've got a new version of Avacyn. This one's Avacyn Guardian Angel. She costs 5, it's 3 white and 2. She's a 5-4 with flying and vigilance, so that's a respectable body for 5. That's a really good body for 5, actually. But then she's got two abilities. One is 1 white and 1 to prevent all damage that would be dealt to another target creature this turn by sources of the color of your choice. So it's like a limited amount of protection. It's just the prevent damage clause in the protection ruling. And then it's got 7 for another ability, prevent all damage that would be dealt to target player this turn by sources of the color of your choice. So target player gets the damage portion of protection from
red
color you pick. Red, black, whatever they're attacking you with.
Yeah. This card is boring. Like, first of all, original recipe Avacyn, awesome. Like,
original recipe Avacyn's pretty impressive.
Yeah, just a super cool, super powerful, good card. This is kind of the best analogy I can draw to it at 8.5 tails.
Yeah, but kind of an overcosted 8.5 tails, huh?
Yeah, like that's the way I kind of look at it. So, that's a card, I guess. Like, this is going to fall into my Hypnophia the Cruel other camp of, you're going to build this because you've got one and you're going to try it, and then you're going to get bored and go back to your good options.
Or like, this is my first EDH general kind of thing. This is a perfectly respectable body for someone who's just trying to get into EDH, right? For the first time?
Sure, if you're trying out EDH for the first time and building mono white, this is fine. This is by no means terrible, it's no means bad, but even if you're looking for kind of this pseudo vanilla white card, there's better options that you'll find, I think, pretty quickly.
Yeah, it is, it's kind of underwhelming. It looks like a card that, I don't know if it was in testing that it got, it looked like it gave protection from the colors, and then it got changed to prevent all damage, and it just, something went awry. The card itself, there's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing exciting about it either. Yes. Even the art is kind of boring.
Yeah, and 7 mana is a lot for that second ability, which I think is gonna be, when we have the M15 review episode, it's going to be entitled, 7 Mana is a Lot.
7 Mana is a Lot. So let's move on to the next guy. Do you want to take this one? Because we're about to talk about the black guy, and I think this guy's going to make you much more excited.
Oh my gosh, I love this one.
Right?
I am so many kinds of in on this card. This is Obnixilus Unshackled. It is black, black, and 4. It's a legendary creature demon with flying and trample. It's a 4-4, so 4-4-6 is not that exciting, but here's the cool part. Whenever an opponent searches his or her library, that player sacrifices a creature and loses 10 life.
Yeah, that's a quarter of your life in EDH and half your life in all the other formats.
Yeah. Whenever another creature dies, put a 1-1 counter on Obnixilus Unshackled. Holy crap!
This card is the nuts. I don't remember who designed this card, if it was...
This is Brad Muir.
Yeah, this is the guy from Guild Wars, I think. Anyway, but this card is insane. It's like 10 life. That's huge. And in EDH, there's so much deck searching. Like, you're going to be shutting down everyone's ramp, everyone's fetch lands, everyone's tutors. This card, I don't know if it's too expensive for that ability on a general, but I know this card is an auto-include in every Kalia deck I'm going to see from now on.
Yeah, just holy crap. And even the threat of this drastically changes your play and your deck construction. I look at this, and I have a Momir Vig deck that's all creatures.
Yeah.
And I'm literally going, okay, what are my tools for dealing with this guy? Because if I can't, I just lose.
Instantly search up the duplicate. Like, just snap duplicate. That's all you can do.
Yeah, eat 10, grab duplicate, and if it's a general grade, it's coming right back.
Yeah, this guy, he is really, really cool, really solid. Another returning character from Magic's past, this guy's from Zendikar, and he's got, like, the art's cool because it's, like, we see that it's him, but we see what he looks like when he's all fully demoned out. So I actually really like this card from almost every standpoint. It's scary. This is by far the it might be tied for the scary factor on these legends. Like, if someone comes down and flips this over as your general, you're immediately gonna look at that player and be like, okay, well, I have to kill you now.
Yeah, how you play the game fundamentally changes with this in play, which I think is awesome for design.
Yeah, big wow factor on this guy. Absolute 10 out of 10. And you look at, like, the 4-4 body for 6, but with an ability, the abilities that this guy has, especially with, like, the addition of the flying and trample too, I feel like if he'd been any beefier, he would have been overpowered.
Oh yeah, it would have been it's so bonkersly powerful, because figure that the first time one person has to crack a fetch, or doesn't quite read their cards well enough and cast Cultivate, you're up to a 5-5 already.
The other thing worth mentioning is that it's when you search your library. So even if you wanted to do something like, you just wanted the blocker, so you want to get your Solemn Simulacrum out, and then you want to do the fail to find, you still have to search your library when you fail to find. So you're still going to be taking that damage.
Yeah, it's just,
Yeah, I'm very excited by this card. I'm also excited by the next card we're going to be talking about, new Mono Red General. And man, this guy fills in a slot that I didn't know Mono Red needed. This is Kirkesh Onake Ancient. He's 2/2 red for a 4/3 Ogre Spirit. Not a lot of spirits in red. And then he has an ability, a single ability. Whenever you activate an ability of an artifact, if it isn't a mana ability, you may pay one red. If you do, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. What do you think about this guy, Noel?
Okay, well, Obnix was Spike's card. This is Johnny's. Because I look at this, and this is in that same vein of the red artifact, like Slowblad Goblin Tinkerer decks.
Absolutely. Like, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's very cool. I feel like this general will inevitably get broken in half by somebody. Like, it won't ever be crazy, like, tier one powerful. But will easily slot into, like, the Bosch Iron Golem, Slowbad Red Artifact. I've heard it called Cosmic Red Machine before.
Yeah. And the other thing I love about this guy is that when you look at those deck themes, like, Slowbad's kind of cool because he's a sacrifice outlet and he can make other things indestructible. But his, like, overall, his abilities are kind of underwhelming. And then you've got Bosch, which is really cool, but he's super expensive. And then whenever you end up playing Bosch for long enough, it's kind of becomes, okay, well, I'm going to get Bosch, and then I'm going to get Grafted Exoskeleton, and then I'm going to infect people to death immediately. But with this guy, he's like right in the middle. He's got a nice cheap cost on him. 4 mana isn't a whole lot. His ability is going to be really cool and can be used as soon as you play him. And he's just like, he's got so much potential for what he can do. And it's, I think that this is a card that people are going to, like, the moment I saw this card, I immediately went to Gatherer and I'm like, what artifacts could I use with this guy? And just because I wanted to know, and like, it got my, like, deck building juices flowing, and I'm really, really excited to see what people turn out for this guy. And then, he's another way for red to get value, too, which is really hard to do in a mono-red deck. But if you've got something like, something as simple as a Brittle Effigy or something like that, you can, like, doubling up your value you get on artifact activations is huge.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're looking for not necessarily nearly as good, like, Temple Bell to refill your hand in mono-red. There's a few different ones I can see. The other thing I see with this, if you're looking for the way to go real deep on this, it involves liquid metal coating and planeswalkers. And I'll let somebody else figure out how to break that, but...
Oh.
Yeah. Micah Synthalattis, this guy in planeswalkers. I'm in.
He also, you can use him to double up any ability trigger or any activated abilities on your artifact creatures. So him and Bosch are going to be really good friends. He can be used to double up just so many cool little things you can do. And then you know what the funniest thing about him is? Is that this was the first time I looked at a card and I was just like, this is the deck that Bludgeon Brawl goes in.
Yep, this is the deck that...
And it works really well. It's just like, well, if I'm going to be playing all these artifacts to get value out of them anyway, I might as well play Bludgeon Brawl so I can throw them all on Kirkesh and swing for General as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really excited by this card. They waited a long time to spoil the Red Legend, like significantly longer than all the others, but I was not disappointed when they finally revealed him. Man, this guy is just so exciting, and I can't wait to see what people do with him.
See, and I was worried because I was in Amara Tandris syndrome, where they waited forever to spoil her, and then she sucked.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, don't do this again to me, Wizards. Do not do this again.
I was really scared because the mono red one was the only one we hadn't seen. And I was just like, they're just waiting because they know it sucks. I'm going to be so brokenhearted by this. But this guy absolutely does not disappoint. And he seems to be from like a plane that we aren't used to.
He's from Chandelar.
Is he from Chandelar?
Yep.
Okay. Then I was going to say, because I don't recognize Anaki. I don't recognize...
He's not from Tarkir.
He's a cool looking dude. I'm happy that we've got another red ogre to play. Heartless Hidetsugu was an awesome general, and this guy's going to be awesome too.
So let's go ahead and hop into the next one, into the green one. This one, I don't know what this is another one that I feel like gets my juices going the wrong direction. Like I'm like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm going to work really hard to make this work and come up with just a big pile of nothing. This is Yisan the Wanderer Bard. He is green and two. For a 2/3 human rogue, and when he pay green and two and tap him, put a verse counter on him, and then search your library for a creature with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters on Yisan, then put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
Yep, another designer card. Two of these cards were designed by guest designers Obnixilis and Yisan. And I know what you mean. I looked at this card, and I thought so long and hard about how I could break him, because it's just, it's such a cool ability. And searching your library is always very powerful in EDH. Obviously, the guy himself, he looks cool. He's got this eye patch going on, and he's, like, playing this weird mutant harp while this giant centipede is in the background. Like, he's a really neat... Overall, he's very, very neat and cool, but he just isn't quite at the power level, I think. And the reason why... And I think that it would have been perfect other than that is the fact that those counters are going to reset when he dies. When he comes back on recast and you have to start at one again, it's not even going to be worth doing.
Yeah, I wish this had a, like, I would even settle for, like, XX and tap, put X verse counters on it.
That would have been great, because then when you're recasting him, obviously you'd pay whatever you needed to recast him, because if you get to keep him for the turn after, when you untap all of those lands, you get to tap them again and get something big.
Yeah, and that's just like, I feel like once it dies, or even then, how good is, okay, so this comes out even, let's say, turn three, turn four, activate it for a one drop?
Yeah.
I go get a mana dork? Like, I don't know, like, tutor for one, tutor for two, tutor for three. Eventually you're just going to get outclassed by everybody else who's casting, you know, four drop, five drop, six drop.
Absolutely. What I think this guy is good for is I think that he would make a great addition to as one of the 99. I don't think he's makes it as a general because of the recasting that I was talking about. But I think that if you slotted him in as a nasty surprise that someone had to deal with in something like your Momir Vig deck is perfect, where he can like date where you have an entire toolbox of creatures, or something like maybe a Captain Siste deck where you're also running a toolbox of creatures. Anyone that's using their creatures to get as their answers or as their corner case stuff is going to like having this guy on the field, and your opponents are going to really, really hate to see him come out on the field, so they're going to try and kill him immediately. So I think he's a really cool addition as one of the 99 in a deck, but I don't think he's the guy to lead the charge.
Yeah, I also think he wouldn't be terrible in Edric, just because you could sit there, because you'll have enough ones and twos.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, you'll have a low enough converted mana cost, but yeah, I'm just, you know, I've played Birthing Pod and Wild Pear, and this seems worse than either of those cards.
That's true. But, like, in white-green, I think it really shines, because on turn one, for the first verse counter, you can get your bird if you want it, or you can get something like a Sarah's Ascendant or a Mother of Runes. Then for two, you can go get, like, a Spirit of the Labyrinth or a Scavenging Ooze or some kind of Hate Bear. And then he's really getting his value out in that particular context. But in other color combinations, I think he goes down a bit.
Yeah, good in Teague, too. Like, if you're just trying to have another way to toolbox out your particular Hate Bear of choice, that's not bad.
Oh, yeah, he'd be great in Teague. Low mana cost and all that stuff.
All right, maybe we've found a way to rehab this guy a little bit, because originally I went unplayable garbage moving on.
Yeah, no, this guy, you look at him and you go, he's amazing, and then you stop for a second, and then you go, oh, no, wait, he sucks, and I don't think he's either of those things. I think he's firmly in between, and that you can make him really good, but I don't think that he's a really good general, which is what we all were initially looking at these new legendaries to be, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just kind of our natural tendency as commander players.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And now we get to the last new legendary, the surprise one that we did not know was coming, a new five-color legendary. Five mana, one of each color, for a 5/5 sliver. We have a new sliver general. It's Sliver Hive Lord. Legendary creature Sliver. Sliver creatures you control have indestructible. When I told my friend about this card, because he hadn't seen the spoilers yet, he had the perfect quote for it. I'm just like, yeah, it gives your Sliver creatures indestructible. And he just looks at me, just deadpan, and goes, that is the last thing that Slivers needed.
I kind of dig this. This gets my Timmy senses tingling.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
It's strong. Is it better than this one? Immediately, you have to draw a comparison to the other three legendary slivers.
Absolutely. And this is why I will say I like this card, because I think it is the only one that competes with Sliver Overlord for best sliver general.
Yeah, I would still say Overlord is better.
I would say Overlord is better, I agree with that. I absolutely do. I'm not arguing that, but I think he's the one who comes closest to competing. And the reason I say that is because he is specifically your slivers. He gives your bonus to only your slivers, so he comes up ahead of Sliver Legion in that way, and he actually gives a bonus to slivers, so he beats out Sliver Queen. And I like him better than those other two, but I still think Sliver Overlord's better.
Yeah, no, this guy would be cool, and let's be honest, this actually kind of plugs a hole, because a lot of people build the five, I think it's one of those things that a lot of players go through, is the five color Slivers and Good Stuff EDH deck.
Oh yeah, everyone builds a Voltron deck, everyone builds a Tribal deck,
I feel like
everyone
tries
building a jank combo that doesn't work.
Yep, but I feel like five color, especially five color slivers,
yes,
happens a lot. And this is not a bad card for those people who are going to play that. It's kind of a neat card in that deck, and I can dig it.
Absolutely, I think it's going to give a lot of people who hate slivers headaches. I personally, I've always respected the power of the slivers. Never been particularly frightened of them. I've never felt like I couldn't deal with a sliver player, but I've always respected their ability to just like explode out a win. So I will be wary every time I see this guy flip over as a general. That being said, Arts on him is pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
He kind of looks like he looks like a good match between the two different sliver styles, the one from the core sets in Chandelar and the ones from the original Dominaria slivers. Kind of looks like the Alien Queen.
Yeah, it looks very much like how I think Sliver Queen's art would have been if it was done today.
Yeah. Just so you know, we all have seen the new Planeswalkers. We're very excited by the six new Planeswalkers, but we're going to save that for our set review. But just know quickly, of the new Planeswalkers, because there's four new ones, which one's your favorite?
From a pure playability standpoint, Nissa.
Nissa?
Yep.
Nissa's pretty good.
Yeah, Nissa's pretty good.
This is the old Nissa kind of really sucked. So this is the Nissa that we deserved.
Yeah, new Nissa's cool. That's just for playability. Flavor wise, I dig a lot of them. New Ajani's neat. It'll be interesting to see. We'll talk about it more when we talk about M15 as a set as a whole. But kind of whether or not they're pushing or punishing the Super Friends deck. And then new Garrick is this big pile of flavor and awesome that makes me happy too. New Jace is kind of meh in my mind. Like, first of all, I'll say foils of this will be freaking gorgeous.
Well, yeah, there is that.
But as far as playability, it's probably my fourth favorite Jace, third favorite Jace.
Yeah, he's pretty underwhelming.
Yeah. And then, oh god, Liliana Vest got a reprint.
She's back!
I like Liliana Vest as a card a lot, so
yeah.
I'm going to leave that one alone for later. And then Chandra Pyromaster's back. We'll talk about them more in depth, but I do like Chandra Pyromaster being back too, because I feel like it's a card that gets underplayed. But
I just want to say Garrick is definitely my favorite. His name is awesome. His art is awesome. The guy just looks... when they said that they were making Garrick into the villain for this set, I kind of didn't buy it because he has to compete with people like, you know, Nicol Bolas, but he does look absolutely terrifying and like that Magic's version of the Hulk and Wolverine mashed together in a very angry package.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get my hands on him. So, moving on past the news, is there anything you want to talk about in your own personal little Magic life, Noel?
Two things, actually. One, Conspiracy's awesome. If you haven't had a chance to actually sit down with a group of friends and draft Conspiracy, do that. Because it fits under this weird mixture of this is Commander and this is Draft.
Yep.
It's super fun, and it's funny because Commander me actually, like, I like playing limited, but I play limited like you're supposed, like you're, I play limited like I'm playing competitively.
Absolutely.
So, for me, I got a hold of a deck, my sweet Conspiracy deck had four copies of Brimstone Volley, and two copies of the one that whenever you cast a spell with a hidden agenda, double it.
Oh.
So I could just do 15 damage to a player whenever a creature died.
Yeah, that sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And then somebody does me a favor and plays two or three of the Volcanic Fallout, so everybody's at like 14, 13. So I have limited me who goes, oh god, I can start killing people, and constructed me going, do it! And limited EDH me going, shouldn't you leave them in the game longer? It's only turn four. And then the guy next to me drops 12 power worth of guys on the field, and I go, oh, I have no blockers. You're dead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm, I played a little bit of Conspiracy. I did not, I didn't get really into it, but I tried it out. Set aside enough time for that draft. I gotta say, if you have complaints about draft because it takes a while to get started with the building of your deck and stuff like that, you ain't seen nothing yet, friend.
Yeah. A couple other things. I did actually get a hold of one of the new rares from M15.
Oh.
I had a solo Ravnica fall off a truck for me. So I actually got to look at the foil sticker and the new font and stuff like that.
Okay, so what do you think about it?
We're, all of us who are up in arms about things are up in arms over nothing.
Really?
The little foil stamp at the bottom is there and is pretty obvious, but okay. It's tiny and has enough different kind of reflections in it. Like, you have the Planeswalker symbol and the color of the mana symbol that the card came off of. So, like, the Solo Ravnica I'm looking at has little islands on it if you tilt it one way, or the Planeswalker logo. So there's not enough of any one surface reflecting to reflect enough light to where you can tell.
Okay.
So I know that was a concern people had. And then really just the new font, capital letters look weird, like R's and G's that hang down weird look a little bit weird. But other than that, it's going to take some getting used to, but they're not bad looking. Like everybody who was Wizards is killing Magic with this is probably wrong.
Yeah, all right, as long as they look like Magic cards, I just want to get my hands on one of those alternate art Goblin Rabble Masters. That guy looks like a cartoon character.
Yes, he does.
Yep.
I also like to point out thank you to the people in Creative who had the testicular fortitude to put Kaboomist on a card.
Oh my god, yes! That, I was really, really excited to see the Goblin, because we've been a couple times in a row to planes without Goblins. We went from Innistrad, then we went to Ravnica where I got a couple new Goblins, and then we went to Theros where I got no Goblins at all. So, like, seeing the full-on Goblin love come back, I was very happy about, especially considering that I now have a Krenko deck. Yeah, for those keeping track of my little identity crisis with decks at, over at home, I have a Krenko deck, and I have a Brimaz deck, and Prosh has returned. I remade Prosh, and I'm happy I took it apart when I did, and I'm happy I remade it when I did, because I came at Prosh with fresh eyes, and I put some new cards in it to make it play a little different, and I think play a little bit better. I've got a lot more interruption in there now, and it's much harder for my opponents to beat me.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff. Like, I love that moment when you leave a deck alone for a while, then come back to it with fresh eyes, because you go, huh, why did I leave all that stuff in there again? Other thing I wanted to let everybody know, for those of you who are on the West Coast or are traveling the Grand Prix circuit or anything like that, if you'd like to meet me, another opportunity is coming. I will be at Grand Prix Portland for all 4 days. I know I have a judge conference on Thursday, so I don't know how long I'll be in the convention hall, but I will be working the event Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So for any of you who are on the West Coast who would like to meet me, I can't promise that I'll have time to get a game in because I'm super busy at these and I always feel bad. But if you still want to, by all means, come and say hi to me. I love meeting fans. It's kind of fun for me to actually meet the people who are commenting and talking to us. So I will be at Grand Prix Portland the second weekend in August.
Awesome. Yep. I'm glad that you began to meet the fans and hand out the signed Rivals Duel cards.
Yeah. There's a Grand Prix in Ottawa this year.
Is there?
Yeah. If you can't make Ottawa, that's really sad.
Me? I can make Ottawa?
Yeah. I can't. I looked at it. I wish I could, but...
Oh, man. Grand Prix in Ottawa. Okay. I guess I better go to that, huh?
Yeah. You should go.
You've been talking up everything. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go in, but I'm not a judge or anything like that, right? So I'm going to have no reason to be there. So I'm going to set up a lemonade stand, I think. I'll just sit in the corner selling freshly squeezed lemonade to Magic players until, like, one or two fans walk up and be like, hey.
You know what you do? Here's a joke I've had for a long time. You should get sympathy puppies. Get like a half a dozen
puppies.
Like half a dozen puppies so that, and
okay.
Keep them in a little pen And then when people get their bad beats and have their, oh, my team got beaten or whatever, they can come up and pet the puppy and have the little puppy, you know, lick their faces and make them feel better.
That's brilliant.
I feel like that should be a standard issue thing that happens at Grand Prix.
I think
there's a reason I don't plan a lot of Grand Prix.
I was going to say, I think you're a genius and that Wizards of the Coast is missing out on a golden opportunity here.
Yeah.
Sympathy puppies.
I'm full of great ideas.
All right. Yes, we are moving right into the argument then. It's time for another general showdown, a three-color general showdown, where we argue who is the scariest general in these three colors. And today it is going to be Gave versus Caridor. Who is the scariest? Is it Daga or Necra?
Necra.
Who is the scariest Necra combo king? Thank you, Noel.
Yep. Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to even, like, the number of people who don't know those terms makes me feel old. I like these. Anyway, but yeah, also those came out, like, for those of you who are wondering, I think that was Apocalypse was when those were. So, for those of you who are trying to go, what are they talking about? Go regather, young whippersnappers.
Young whippersnappers. Get off of my lawn!
Back in my day, Wrath of God killed Black Knight sometimes.
Back in my day, nobody played Mana Flare.
Yes, they did. Anyway.
Your hatred of that card is amazing.
Yeah, my hatred of... Never mind. Go back to the old episode if you want to hear me rant about Mana Flare. Anyway, let me talk about my general first.
Okay, and who are you representing heavyweight bout?
Yeah, I am repping Caridor Ghost Chieftain, and the reason that I like him is, first of all, he doesn't flat out whenever I see Gate, like, I hate to say that I like Caridor because I don't like Gave, but with Gave, it seems like one of two things happen. You either have the instant combo kill Gave decks, or you have the super grindy, I'm going to cast two Grave Packs and every turn just grind out. So every game is over in either 5 minutes or 4 hours with Gave. I feel like it's just one of those decks that just grinds out. Or is done in a flash in the pan. So it's two kinds of things that drive me up the wall. Mm-hmm. Caridor, for me, is this very kind of... It has the same inevitability as Gave. Like, it feels like if I am playing long enough with Caridor, I'm going to win. Just because I can eventually set up kind of the engine. It plays a lot like if you've ever played junk midrange or played a lot of junk cube decks or green-black kind of engine-y cube decks. Eventually you're going to win just because you have a near unlimited amount of resources where your opponents don't. And to me, I like that without feeling as oppressive as Gave is.
Okay, that's fair. It's hard for me to argue with you because you're basically saying that Gave is more powerful, and I agree with that. That's why I'm arguing for Gave. I think that Gave is better and stronger. I would also like to point out that we talk about accidental combo kings all the time, but I think Gave is officially the accidental combo king. I don't think Animar or any of the other ones combo as hard or as well as Gave does, because he just combos with everything. Like, absolutely everything combos with this dude. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's something, like, to me, the decks that just dedicated combo watch me win aren't the interesting ones. They're the ones that, okay, you did your thing. Can you put it away now so we can go do something else? Let's talk about, though, that also that I still feel Caridor is very powerful.
Ability... You won't get me arguing that Caridor isn't powerful. He is definitely a good general.
Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, essentially I have two hands. And unless people target hate at me, unless people target a lot of hate at my graveyard, I effectively get to, nothing stays dead. I can play Wrath of God and literally put them all back in my hand instead of put them into my yard. Like, it's, to me, Caridor is powerful because I have just this giant pile of inevitability.
Yep, and I would agree with that, although you did bring up an excellent point, and one of the problems I have with Caridor is the graveyard hate, and the way it's just like just because of the way you build the deck to take advantage of the graveyard and the way you so like having your graveyard there, if someone hits you with a piece of graveyard hate, it really, really hurts. And if someone hits you with a more permanent piece of graveyard hate, something along the lines of a Rest in Peace or a Leyline of the Void, it's crippling in a Karador deck. It's really, really rough for them to have to deal with that.
I think that comes down to having enough answers in your Karador deck. You know, I've become a huge fan of Silverchafe's Fox. Just because it says exile and enchantment, that's really relevant now. But people, like, if you're building Gave, I hate to say it, but those are the two scariest cards, is Rest in Peace and Leyline. And having ways to deal with those, conveniently they're both enchantments, and right now, the second biggest rant I can give people is, play more enchantment hate, right after play more graveyard hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially with the gods now. Like, people aren't, I think with, Karador players, they need to play around those cards, or how can my deck get around that if they shut that off?
Absolutely. And, Gave itself is, Gave's very powerful because he can, of course, he can graveyard combo as well with stuff like Karmic Guide and Revelark, but most of his combos are on enchantments, and as you were just saying, enchantments are hard to deal with and people aren't running enough hate for them because they're, especially in something like Gave where you're running so many enchantments, because he is so able to combo with so many of them, that it's just like, okay, did you answer my Cathar's Crusade? Cool. Here's my doubling season. Did you answer my doubling season? Cool. Here's my Earthcraft. Like, it's just, there's so much that you can do with them. And it's really, really, really hard for an opponent to kind of get up from that. The other thing is that the way I like to see Gave played is the combo, and then when the combo fails, token win. Where it's just like, okay, you've shut off my combo or you've shut off my general, but here's a bunch of tokens that I've generated, and now I'm going to play Beastmaster Ascension and swing at you for lethal.
Now, I will say that there's a lot to be said for that being a way to attack Gave. I know a lot of people who will go after Gave, even playing cards like, I was kind of surprised. I had a friend of mine who built this deck, and it changed our meta for a little bit. People would run things like Knight of Souls Betrayal, or
oh yeah,
even just a well-timed Pyroclasm, where it's just like, here, I'll shut off your deck. You have a 4/4 vanilla guy that you can have infinite death triggers, which you could already have.
Yeah, well, infinite death triggers, there's some cards to make that gross, too. But, I totally get what you're saying. I understand your frustration with Gave, but I think that he's the more powerful one, and I think he's the sturdier one, too. Because most everyone, I'll say like 80% of people will run graveyard hate. Like, people will run a little bit of graveyard. Everyone in black will run a Bajuka Bog, and then a couple other people have recognized the value of graveyard hate, so they'll run it too. So there's a significant number of people who run graveyard hate. The number of people who run Knight of Souls Betrayal is pretty limited.
But there's ways to just deal with creatures. Like, you know, you Wrath of God Gave deck at the right time. Which, Gave or Gave? Do we have a pronunciation guide on this? Because I've heard Gave before, too.
I've been saying Gave, so let's just keep saying Gave to make me not look like a huge idiot.
Okay, well, I have no problem with that. But, Gave in that case.
Bugger!
What did you say?
I called you a bugger.
Okay, like, I thought you said something else that I was going to have to bleep.
Oh, no, that's not what I said.
You have the queen on your money. You're British.
Okay, Dr. House, tell me about Karador.
Yeah. Anyway, I feel like though, at the end of the day, Gave, you can still kill the, and I know this is going to sound dumb, but you can do this to Karador too, but a well-timed Wrath against Gave sets Gave back really hard. A well-timed Wrath against Karador buys you a turn.
See, I would agree with you if it wasn't for the Terminus and Hallowed Burial effect, and how everyone seems to be running those cards in ways to fetch them up. I don't know if this is just in my meta, or if you've been seeing this too, where all of the white control decks that have white are running Terminus and ways to put it on top of their library so that they can miracle it, because they recognize that it's so much more reliable a Wrath than any other one you can get right now. because it gets around Indestructible and it gets around Generals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's Tuck, which is a different thing we've already gone over in a really old podcast now. But to me, that's the reason people run that. But at the same point, Tuck hurts Gabe as much as it hurts Corridor. You know, at the end of the day, without Corridor, you still have a pretty powerful Necra dudes deck and with Corridor. Like, I know, like, I've played Corridor without Corridor before, whether it's been Tucked or the card Nevermore has been this thing, like, randomly showing up in my meta. More and more people are just randomly slotting it in.
It's pretty powerful against a lot of decks.
Yeah, and so I've played without, I've played while being Edgar Allan Poe with Never, Edgar Allan, Edgar Allan Poe was how they put it, with Never, yeah, pawns, woo! And so at the end of the day, with Corridor at least, you still have a very pretty powerful strategy of just kind of that junk mid-range.
Yeah, I was going to say, but with Gabe, it's so much harder to tuck him because he's got that sacrifice effect on him, right? Gabe can sacrifice himself, can he not?
Yeah, he can. That's what I was looking at, is he doesn't have the sacrifice another creature thing anymore.
Yeah, so he can... Gabe is kind of more resilient in that way, too, because he can do the, like, the bob and weave out of the way of a lot of the tuck effects, but whereas Corridor, it's a lot easier to tuck him unless you have a sacrifice effect on another card already in play.
Can we go on a random sidebar for just a second?
Absolutely.
About my new favorite card. Well, not new favorite card, but new favorite card of the week.
Noel, this would not be Rivals Duel if we didn't have random sidebars.
My new favorite card of the week is Sudden Spoiling.
Oh, that card's brutal.
The one that makes all of their dudes O2s and lose all abilities and have split seconds so they can't do anything about it.
Yeah, no, that card can be pretty harsh.
There are so many times where I've just I'm flat out losing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, against decks like Rune, or against decks where it's like, this is my out. If I can find this decks, games I have no right to win. That and Time Stop have become my two favorite new cards.
Time Stop's pretty good.
Oh, my... Do you know how sad it is for a player to have a bunch of stuff exiled with Rune, and when the delayed trigger happens to Time Stop them?
My favorite thing is when Time Stop's one of the counter spells that people don't run enough of, so people haven't realized how powerful it is against my Prosh deck, because I'll cast Prosh, and then the usually uncounterable trigger to get my tokens will go on the stack, and you'll Time Stop in response to that trigger, and I lose Prosh and the tokens.
Yeah.
Although someone tried using Sudden Spoiling while I was swinging with a Beastmaster Ascension out, and I was kind of like, okay, you still die?
Yeah, not a good choice. That's not how the layers work.
That's not how that functions, friend. Sudden Spoiling and Time Stop, two cards that definitely need to see more play.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the argument at hand about Corridor versus Gabe.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the reason I like... One other thing I like about Corridor is it's more resilient to losing your general. Like, to put a pin in that last point, it's more resilient to losing your general in that it feels like with Gabe, if you lose Gabe, you either have the shell of a weird token deck or some counter, combos that you're hoping to kind of just prey into.
I can understand your point, but, like, again, you still have I know a lot of Gabe decks will run backup ways to generate a huge amount of tokens. Stuff like Avenger of Zendikar, they also run, Increasing Devotion? Mm-hmm. That's the one, where you can get a bunch of 1/1s. So it's like, you still have the token deck there, and while yes, I will concede that maybe Gabe has a harder time functioning if you lose the general, it is so much harder to lose Gabe as a general than it is most generals because of that sacrifice effect. You're almost limited. If they have a mana open, which they should, if they're playing Gabe, they should always have one mana open, then you're almost limited to, like, the hinders and the spell crumples. And that's kind of it. Like, you can Nevermore it, but then again, they're in white-green, so it's not like an enchantment's going to stick around long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some neat stuff, and this I feel is probably the closest battle we've had.
I don't remember all of our battles, so I don't know if I can agree with that, but this is very neck and neck. You can easily see a perfectly built Corridor deck and a perfectly built Gabe deck going head to head and coming out at 50-50 for wins.
Yeah, I feel like these are very similar in power, which is ironic because they're in the same Commander precon, came out at the same time, and really, these two have pretty much, I guess, if you're looking for straight up power level in Necra, this is it.
Oh yeah, the other deck that I will say is very good is the playing Doran the Siege Tower as just a vanilla 5/5 junk aggro deck. But the problem with that deck is that it tends to fall apart a lot more when you take it out of a 1v1 and put it in multiplayer. Caridor and Gave both almost function better in multiplayer.
Yeah, I agree that the Doran can just beat face in 1v1. Now, if you're looking for interest, you can always play the Doran plus a million walls plus Stalking Stones. Or not Stalking Stones, the one where walls can attack. Is that Stalking Stones?
I have no idea.
Yeah, there's a card that lets walls attack that can be super fun and, you know, it's one of those goofy theme decks that's not nearly as powerful. But
oh, yeah.
If you're looking for just the power level, you've got, what, Vorash the Hunter is the other one?
Oh, God, yeah, that guy's not very good.
He's a turn, isn't he 2 hits? Is he 2 hits?
Is he the one who puts a bunch of...
Yeah, he's like 7, and then doesn't he put 6, or does he put 3 or 6 plus one counters?
Oh, I forget. He's not that good.
Yeah, Vorash.
No. He's Teneb the Harvester.
Oh, it is Teneb.
Yeah, no, he is good. This is one of the few dragons that's actually really good.
Yeah, I actually really like Teneb too, actually, but.
Yeah. Teneb, the reanimate your opponent's dudes.
Yeah. No, from a graveyard, so it's any graveyard.
Oh, wow, you can reanimate your own dudes. Yeah, Teneb's pretty cool.
Teneb is also good in Corridor.
Mm-hmm. Good as a cool 6/6.
Yeah, well, a 6/6 then lets you, your odds are you've got dudes in your yard in Corridor.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that, the fact that Caridor, it's just like, it screams out almost how to hate it out of the game. It's just like, if you, and it's one of those things where, like you were saying, like, metas adjust, and metas will adjust to a problem Caridor deck very quickly. Because everyone will just be like, well, I can play Graveyard Hate because my Graveyard Hate is, you know, colorless. I can play Relic of Progenitus. Whereas something like Gave is just like, okay, how is the Izzet deck going to play Enchantment Hate?
I will say, though, that if a meta turns against Gave, like we're talking about it turning against Corridor, Gave deck can be screwed pretty hard. You know, I guess the Corridor deck can at least build into being resilient to it, just because I think it kind of expects its hate more.
Okay.
Where I bring, like, Sever the Bloodline in against Gave.
Yeah.
And just one-shot all of their tokens.
Yeah.
I feel like that the Corridor deck naturally builds itself to, I have to be resilient because there are people on podcasts preaching to play more Graveyard Hate.
I have to be resilient because Eric and Noel are dicks.
Well, let's be honest. What's the most common things you tell people when they're building an EDH deck?
Yeah, play more hate.
Yeah, play more graveyard hate.
Play more hate of any kind. Mm-hmm. Play cheaper cards and play more hate.
Yeah,
is what I say.
And so yeah, it's one of just the most common thing. And so I think Corridor you kind of build into that, or even then maybe you just have to go over the top and just play junk mid range, which believe it or not is completely acceptable. Blood Baron of Viscopa, okay in Commander it turns out.
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of junk mid range. I'm not sure if I like Corridor as the general or if I like Teneb, but junk mid range is a fun deck that I've been thinking about building for a while. I will say that Gave is very build around me, build into the token theme, build into the combo theme. But again, he combos freaking everything.
Yeah, he just, there's so many times where you're gonna go, oops, I accidentally win with Gave.
Yeah.
Which I'm actually a fan of not having those kind of decks put together, like decks where I can just oops and accidentally win.
Yeah.
Either own it and say, I'm building this to win, or doing that, just the whole random, I'm just going to stuff good cards in here, and I'm just going to stuff 7 or 8 combos, and eventually they'll just rise to the top.
Yeah. No, the thing I like about oops, I accidentally win, is that you only can get away with it, like, twice, and then you aren't accidentally doing it anymore. Yeah.
Then you need to go and spend a little bit more time on the, at the building table and trying to figure out what you're doing.
Yeah. And like I said, I play in a very competitive meta. I play in the kind of play to win meta. And I have seen the Gave in the Carador decks. I've seen more Carador decks around recently than I have seen Gave decks, but I think that's just because of the inclinations of the people playing them. And I think I prefer the Gave combo deck. I think the Gave combo is a little faster. I think it's a little bit more resilient. And I think that I think you see a lot of cards getting printed for it still. I don't know why Wizards has been on kind of this plus one counter kick. But, there's a lot of good stuff in the recent years that's been printed for Gave. Obviously, any creature that gets printed is good for Carador. But, I feel like there's been a lot of really good stuff to keep comboing with the Gave deck or make the Gave deck combo a little faster and a little better.
I will say this. I think the Carador deck is infinitely more interesting than Gave. I think I can name 30 cards that are in every Gave build if we're trying to optimize it, where I don't feel like I can do, I feel like I can name 15 in Carador.
I don't know if I agree with that. Because if you sit here and name all the enchantments that go into Gave, I can name all the good enters the battlefield, creatures that are gonna be in Carador.
Yeah, but at the end of the day though, I still have 30 spots to play with that are neat, and you've got 15.
I think the
quote unquote must includes in Gave are way higher than in Carador.
Okay, so what are the must includes for Gave to you? Let's do this. What are the must includes in Gave to you?
Okay.
Because I can think of maybe 10 enchantments.
Okay. The auto ones that come to mind for me are Grave Pact, Dictate of Erebos, Martyr's Bond.
Okay.
Then the things that are gonna interact with the tokens, so Beastmaster Ascension, I'm trying to think of the other, Beastmaster Ascension, Cathar's Crusade,
Doubling Season,
Parallel Lives, arguably the new one from Commander 2013, but I'm not a big fan of that one as a lot of people are.
Okay.
I would argue that deck can token hard enough to where it might be okay to have that in there.
Alright.
You need your backup sources of tokens, be it, Increasing Devotion, White Sun Zenith, whatever your other ones are, you're going to have the things that maximize on your death triggers, Blood Artist, I'm trying to think of the other ones that would go with that, Butcher of Malakir,
okay.
Other ones that trigger on death. I think you're going to have the generic things that have to go in every green-white deck, which Carador has too, don't try to tell me it's not. I feel like you've got, and then just the generic, like, Daybreak Coronet. Not Daybreak Coronet. That's not.
I was gonna say, what kind of Gave deck are you playing that you're playing Daybreak Coronet?
Yeah, not Daybreak Coronet. The Selesnya Artifact from wherever. Ways to maximize sacrifice outlets.
I'll just say, when you're talking about the stuff to maximize on the sac outlets and stuff like that, the auto includes for me that I was thinking of when I think of Gave are the Doubling Season, the Cathar's Crusade, and the Parallel Lives that you were talking about. I don't see as many Grave Pact effects as you're talking about. I think that I don't know if it's just because of my meta or if that's like not as common a deck that as you seem to think it is because you've played against it a lot, but I have not seen the Grave Pact Gave deck. I've never come across the grindy Gave deck because the combo one just wins so much faster that I've never seen someone who felt the need to build it. But I can understand your frustration with that, but like the only one for that that I see people playing is Blood Artist, because they combo and they win instead of just comboing and like blowing stuff up. And then there's a couple of creatures that you put in just because they love to be sacked, and the biggest one I can think of is Academy Rector.
Yeah,
you've got sacked out in general.
Mm-hmm. You also are probably running the Altars, you're probably running Grease the Redeemed, you're probably running...
Yeah.
Some other things like that.
Yeah. But again, I could list off probably a significant portion of your Carador deck just by guessing. Like, well, maybe not your deck, Noel, because you build strange.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you wanna take that bet?
Because yeah. I don't think I would ever have bet that I'd see Silver Chase Fox. But you're gonna see, like, all the stuff that goes to the graveyard when it comes into play in order to get some kind of benefits or stuff like Steve. You're gonna see a lot of probably Slum Reapers and Fleshbag Marauders. You're gonna see all the Enter the Battlefield hates, so you're probably gonna have, all Acidic Slime, Indrik Stomp Howler, anything that enters the battlefield and kills stuff too. Are you playing Shadowborn Demon in your Caridor deck?
I'm not right now because I didn't have an extra one. I should be.
You should be. I was going to say that that just popped into my head that I had to recommend that card to more people because it's amazing. But yeah, so I will say that I agree with you that if you're building the optimum Gave deck, that there is a list. There is a list that you're basing your stuff on, but I don't think it's necessarily any more strict than the list for Caridor.
And I feel like there's more flexibility in there, because yes, I could put Indric Stomp Howler, or I could put, I've seen Wickerbow Elder, the new one from M15 seems sweet, but let's talk about that one later.
Oh yeah.
You know, how you do that, where I feel like the straightforwardness of Gave is pretty hard to beat. Both these decks can play my new pet card, Fertilid.
Oh, yeah, both of them could play Fertilid. It's hard to argue.
Break Fertilid.
I was going to say, it's hard to argue who's playing that one better, though.
Yeah, like, for the record, if you haven't heard, I was on the season finale for Commander Cast and spent a lot of time gushing about Fertilid. So if you want my opinions on that card, go check out Commander Cast.
Alrighty. And that would probably be a good time to do that, because I think we're coming down to the end of this argument.
Yeah, so this is one of those, who won, who's next, you guys decide. Let us know what you think. If one of us was completely wrong, or one of us completely missed something, or you think whoever won, I'm curious to hear it. So, as always, you can contact us either in the comments below of our articles, or if you want to get a hold of me personally, you can contact me at noelclausson@gmail.com. That's NOELECLAUSON@gmail.com, or on Twitter at MTGNoel.
Yeah, and you can get a hold of me at ericbonvie@gmail.com, ericbonvie@gmail.com, or you can get a hold of me at thatbonvieguy on Twitter, and you can tell me all about how I was right and how you want to see Noel in Star Spangled Booty Shorts.
We're going to avoid that. Also, one other thing to think about is our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/rivalsduel. Check us out on there. We're really bad about posting things on it, so we're going to try to be better at that.
Absolutely. I'm going to try making sure that I post things at least like twice a week now.
Yeah. And then also, if you have an RSS feeder and would like to pick us up directly, our feed is feeds.feedburner.com/rivalsduel.
Yep. And that's it for this week. We will be posting shows all during Commander Cast break. There's no rest for the wicked, and seeing as how we only have a once every 2 week posting schedule anyway, it would be kind of lame if we had to relax from that.
One other thing I'd like to throw out to the community is that Rivals Duel is looking to expand. And not necessarily, we're not leaving Commander Cast, don't start rumors that aren't true, but we're looking for other websites that might be interested in hosting our stuff, whether it's in a commercial setting or in just another non-commercial setting, and getting ourselves out there more. And I've learned rapidly that the community that I think I'm in the center of, I'm actually not, and I'm amazed at who knows who. So if you know some place that is looking for content or stuff like that and would like a solid quality podcast about Commander, we're happy to be in part of that conversation. So I'm always amazed by, I find out who's listening to the show, or who knows someone who listens to the show, or who listens to the show who knows someone. So if you're in that kind of situation where you'd like to see us somewhere, let us know. We're always happy to expand kind of our brand.
Alrighty, and that's all for today, folks. Hope to see you again in 2 weeks.
Yep, talk to you later. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Might want to edit that one out.
I'm going to. Like, there's just going to be this moment you're going, oh!